Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Is it?
It is. So today we will be discussing the first episode of season two, which is the, what, ninth episode total? Or serial, I mean. It's the Planet of Giants, which consists of three episodes, Planet of Giants, Dangerous Journey, and Crisis, which aired from October 31st, 1964 to November 14th, 1964. And a fun fact, there was actually originally four episodes, the fourth episode being called The Urge to Live, and they decided to combine three and four into one episode to pick up the pace, I guess. There's a reconstruction. They like split it back apart and padded it out to be episode three and episode four.
Why on earth would... Why?
Just, you know, for funsies. Just to see what it was originally going to be like. Though it was a recreation. It wasn't like a like the reconstructions where they have the audio. No, this is like a complete... They got like the actors to record lines. And they had impersonators do the ones who had passed away.
That's so bizarre to me because it's like someone made an editorial decision that's like, yeah, this will be better if we smush these two things together. And someone went back and went, wait, you changed your mind at some point? Let's recreate it like it would have been if it was worse.
I'd actually kind of like to see it. We did not watch that. We didn't know about it until we, right before we started recording this podcast, I was looking at the Wikipedia. Basically, because they did that, it threw them off an episode. So that's why they made this sort of prequel to a Dalek story in season three. So the Dalek cutaway, that one I've talked about for a little while, like it's like setting out this future serial and it doesn't have any of the main TARDIS crew or anything in it. It's a really bizarre episode.
That's where it comes from here.
Yeah, it comes because of some dude like, this is too long. Make it one episode instead of two. Which, they need that guy all the time.
Someone give that guy a medal. He's my favorite.
And a raise. So, I have to say, this doesn't seem like a typical Doctor Who episode to start your season off with. Which apparently was also going to be the first episode, or the first serial of the first season, and then it got shifted to now. Which I can see why, because it doesn't involve time travel. Or traveling through space. It's kind of like a weird little what if sort of thing. So I can see why they didn't make it the very first story.
It's so good, you guys. When it ended, I was like, that was the best episode of Doctor Who ever. Of all time.
There's only one reason why you think that.
There is only one reason, and it's because I really like small things, and they were so small the whole time. Everything else was so big!
That's what this episode is. The TARDIS crew get shrunk to, like, what, maybe an inch high?
That's it. They say, they literally say, yeah, we're about an inch. All of us.
They're so small.
So let's
tell us what happens while I cry.
Yeah, Tony has, like, an incredible love for tiny things. On her birthday, we had a tiny food party, and I bought her tiny things.
They were little tiny taco salads, because they were just those scoop
chips.
With, you know, taco salad in them. And they were so small, and they were so cute. And what else were there? There were little hamburger cookies.
Yeah, hamburger cookies, and I made you, like, tiny little rainbow
tiny
cakes.
Cake?
And,
I have tiny taco earrings.
We had tiny chicken and waffles.
We did have tiny chicken and waffles.
I just put chicken nuggets on, like, a Eggo.
This is, like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's one of those things that just presses my buttons.
Tony likes things that are out of scale.
I do. I like things that are too big, because that means something else is tiny. And this episode was great. I can't say that. The set pieces were awesome.
Yeah.
They were amazing. And not just because everybody's an inch tall and it's oversized things and I love it. it was actually really well done. The sink set
was great.
Was awesome.
Though if you think about it, I know we're jumping way ahead, but the little plunger thing was in the same spot every single time, even like after it, like
after it's been moved.
Yeah, like when they wash their hands, they plug it up and then they unplug it, and it's in the exact same spot.
But there's a lot of very cool set pieces where, like, there's a scene where Ian is inside of a matchbox. There's just different, a briefcase that they climb into, and it all looks very cool. It looks very believable.
Yeah, and I feel like they actually got the scale pretty accurate. Like, there's no point where I was like, oh, that would be bigger
that's way too small. There's even a point where there's, I think it's a fly. Like, the first time you see it, you see a dead ant, and you're like, well, I made it dead, because that's easy. But then later they show you there's a fly, and it's moving around, and I'm like, yeah, I buy that. So, the episode starts.
They're just hanging out in the TARDIS.
The doors of the TARDIS start to open before they've properly materialized, which of course is impossible, because everything that happens is impossible.
This is a little side note, but do the doors look different? They're like jagged now, where I think they used to just be straight.
Yeah, I think they have a little bit of a redesign there. I'd have to go back and look for certain.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. And also, did the Doctor always have a cape, or is that new?
He's had one before, because he wore one in, it was like a major plot point in The Sensorites.
I'm having a cape?
Yeah, because one of the Sensorites was like, you can't tell the humans apart, they all look the same. And he's like, yeah, I can, the Doctor's hair is different. And he's like, and I remember seeing him, I remember seeing his coat. And the Doctor's like,
oh yeah, and he like flips his cape.
And he's like, I've been wearing this all day. He has worn a cape before, and that's how I remember.
Right, so yeah, the alarm's going off, the door's open before they're supposed to, and then we get...
The alarm, by the way, is like this awful kind of horn and not lovely cloister bells.
Yeah.
Like I've grown accustomed to.
No, it's not the first time we've heard these alarms. I think it was in the second serial, Edge of Destruction, there was
alarms.
Edge of Destruction, too.
There were alarms, and it's the same kind of just
like an alarm clock. And then the TARDIS appears. I was like, it's clearly a miniature, but it works for this situation.
I almost wonder if someone just sat down and thought that. It bums me out that this doesn't look exactly like how we want it to look. We can't really pull off the scale. And it's like, wait, what if that was an asset? What if we wanted it to be that way?
And so they've landed, and the Doctor's all worried, and like Susan goes and is like, looks at the fault indicator, and she's like, there's no problem. And the Doctor's like, I don't believe you. Because no one believes Susan.
He goes
ever.
And he looks at the fault indicator and he's like, well, there's no problem.
But
like,
there's
we
gotta
know
be.
Susan just said that.
There's gotta be a... Well, to be fair, there is a problem. And he's like... And then he apologizes to Barbara for being
rude.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so when everything is going wrong and the sirens are going off, the Doctor gets grumpy because that's what he does. I kind of really like the scene, actually, because there's been a couple of times where things have gone wrong and the Doctor is just like, whoa, you just got awfully intense there all of a sudden. Like, you're being kind of an asshole, no offense. And there's this scene between the Doctor and Barbara where he says, oh, was I being mean just then? I kind of forget the niceties under pressure. I like it because it's kind of, I've given the Doctor shit for being an asshole. And I like the idea that he's just, he never really means the things he says when he kind of is grumpy. When he's threatening to throw you off the ship and leave you in the middle of the French Revolution, it's all just kind of noise. And like 5 seconds later, he'll be fine. You just have to wait for him to calm down. That's just how he reacts to being stressed out.
So yeah, he apologizes to Barbara, and then he's like, well, I still think there's something bad going on. Let's turn on the TV and see what's outside. And the TV explodes. Because I guess pressure, I don't know. Because of the size, but I don't know how that works.
Yeah, the whole thing with... I mean, it takes them almost the entirety of this episode to work out that they're small. Which actually happens in a really nice scene because they split up. The Doctor goes with Barbara and Ian.
And then, like, these giant, like, weird rocks.
Yeah, and Ian goes with Susan. And they kind of... They cut between the two of them figuring it out in a way that was really nice.
Yeah, like, the Doctor's like... Like, there's, like, these pathways in the cracked rock thing.
Right,
and he's
they're basically on a sidewalk, and they're, like, inside of a crack in the sidewalk.
And it's like a pathway of, like, separate
rocks. Up to somebody's house.
Yeah. And, like, the doctor's like, this looks it seems random, but I feel like there's a pattern. Like, there's a mind behind this. So he is sort of clues in that it's, you know, not just, like, a natural formation or whatever. But, and then they come across, like, a giant dead earthworm, which he's like, this looks like it's from your planet, but it can't be because it's huge.
That would be weird.
And then, like, Ian and Susan come across an ant, right?
First they find an ant egg, and Ian picks it up, and he's like, they're like, what is it? Like, it's, you know, it's not the shape of any other kind of egg that it should be. And he's like, an ostrich? No, that doesn't make any sense. And then they come across the giant ant, which there's a whole bunch of eggs and ants, and everything's dead. Everything they come across is dead.
Which is, A, helpful for, like, yeah, you know, not having...
Not dying by ants.
Yeah. It just have, like, a still prop. But it is a very important plot point as well.
Yes.
But also helpful.
Which, by the way, I would like to point out, in the scene where, with Susan and Ian and the ants. No, it's not the scene with the ants. Susan and Ian see the ants and they move on and they find a giant matchbox.
And also like a, what is it, like a seed packet or something?
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, it was like a giant... It was like I thought it was a giant card or something, but I think it was like a giant seed packet.
And it's great because Ian just keeps going, this must be for like an exhibit, right? Like, we're on Earth. We have to, all of these things that we're coming across are all Earth things. Something like, this is like the World's Fair or something. This is like an exhibit. That must be what it is. And Susan's like, no, man, we're really small. And Ian's like, nope, that's too weird. I don't like it.
Yeah.
It must be an exhibit. And Susan's like, no, we're really small. I just told you that. And eventually he gets convinced of it, but it...
Yeah, and meanwhile, the Doc and Barbara have also figured it out pretty much at the same time, but in a separate location.
Yes.
And then they're looking at the matchbox, and Ian just decides, I'm going to get inside of it.
It's so cute, because he sits on top of it. Like, it's one of those where it's like, it's open just a little bit, and he's sitting on the top, and he's kind of slinging his legs on the inside of it, and it's so cute. But for some reason, he actually gets inside, and of course it gets, you know, picked up and brought inside. And
there's like a scene of him just...
He's got his hands on either side of it, and you know,
he's just
nothing's
rocking
moving.
Back and forth.
And it's the best! He loved it so much.
Like, Susan rushes up to, like, the doctor and Barbara and is like, something took Ian, and then, like, they're gonna climb up the rock to see over, and, like, Susan starts to, and Barbara starts to, and the doctor's like, no, let me do it, because I'm clearly the one who's most capable of climbing up a rock wall, the 80-year-old dude.
It's out of kindness.
I know, but Susan and Barbara would be so much more...
Yeah.
They both have to help him up. And he looks, and then he sees, like, it's a house.
Which I do...
There's a guy smoking.
They're like, I guess we have to go to the house now, because that's where Ian is. And they're very reasonable about how far away it is.
Yeah.
Like, how small they are, and how far they have to walk. By the time they actually get to the house, Barbara's like, oh my god, I'm so tired. We've been walking for ages.
And to fill in that gap of them walking, we get the... I guess the B plot,
yeah,
of the guy that picked up was going to start smoking is I guess a scientist.
Yes, and he's been working tests on this insecticide,
mm-hmm.
which is why everything's dead. The problem with the insecticide is that it kills everything indiscriminately, really, really well.
And it's like permanent, basically. Like it doesn't like decay easily or whatever. So like it'll seep into the soil and be bad and. It's not a good thing. And he's going to write a report about it. And this guy that's, like, trying to sell the insecticide is like, hey, don't write that report because I want tons of money for this awesome insecticide. And the guy's like, well, I'm not going to do that because it's bad. And so he pulls a gun on him.
Shoots him.
Yeah. That's shoots him.
Like, right. Shoots him dead.
Shoots him dead. What's this say?
It says...
Falling Beck? Falling Beck.
I have no idea.
Falling bee. Sorry, my bad.
There's a bee! idea!
And it falls right in front of Susan, Barbara, and the doctor.
Which, that's something that I kind of like, is the sounds. The, like, sound the bee makes right before it dies.
Yeah.
Is very, it's kind of, like, low-pitched. It's like it would sound if you were small, I could only assume.
Yeah.
But they do that a lot with, when people, when, you know, regular-sized people are speaking, and it's just this kind of, like, low, booming sound.
Yeah. We never get to hear the reverse of, like,
No, that would have been awesome.
Yeah. The bee falls, and they also hear what sounds like the sound of a cannon, which is the gunshot. And then Ian just walks in front of the dead guy. I guess they filmed it, like, projected it on a wall or something, maybe? And Ian, like,
yeah, it seemed like it was just, like, a picture he was kind of standing in front of.
Yeah, they did it a couple of times with different, like, so they could have, like, real stuff, like, the dead guy's face, and Ian walks in front of it. And they did it with a couple of other things. I don't remember off the top of my head what else they did. But
for me, that one stands out.
Yeah, I mean, every time they did it, it was just, it looked slightly more grainy.
Yeah.
So that's how I could tell that they were doing that. And then there's a cat as well.
Yeah, they finally make it back up to the house.
That was actually a little weird. Like, I wonder if that was a cut thing because, like, just suddenly Ian's back with the gang.
Yeah.
There was, like, no, like, oh, we found you sort of thing. It was just like,
well, no, there is.
There's a dead guy.
I guess they're, you don't really see the point where they're all like, Ian, you're here. They're kind of, yeah, they are kind of just suddenly back. But they get there. And I think Susan is kind of like, it sure is good that all those things were dead. Otherwise, this might have been more dangerous. And then it's like, cut to the cat. And it's like, oh, this is going to be a problem.
And that is the cliffhanger, is a cat.
Which is legitimately pretty frightening.
That's the end of Planet of Giants, and we are on to Dangerous Journey. Did she say that would have been a dangerous journey?
I think so, yes. And then that's the next.
That's kind of clever. If that's what happened. So they just stand and wait for the cat to go away?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a cat, so they stand very still. Cats basically operate the same as velociraptors, I think.
Yes, obviously.
So they stand very still, and the cat's kind of like, well, this is boring. I'm going to go play with that dead bee or something.
Or that dead guy. Like, it doesn't take long
really?
For cats to, like,
to eat you.
Eat dead people, yeah.
No.
It's like a day, isn't it, or something? That's what I remember.
It might be three. Who was it that had that joke that's like, when your cat, when you wake up in the middle of the night and your cat is kind of staring at you, they're not waking you up, they're testing you for doneness.
I mean, think it was
what's a local guy?
Or it could have been Cockanane, I don't remember. It was somebody at the Chattanooga Film Festival, though.
It's a good joke, and I think about it all the time.
If it was you, if it was you, kudos on the joke. Good job. You're not listening to this.
No.
So, yeah, then the team sort of has this discussion, and the doctor's immediately like, yeah, we can't talk to people because we're tiny, and they wouldn't be able to hear us.
Yeah, they don't
hear
them.
I don't know if I've seen that before, because generally in these sort of we got shrunk things, people can still hear people fine.
Like, I know I've seen it before.
Like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, maybe, or Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves.
There was like a park there for a while. I don't know if there still is, but it was like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids park, and everything was big. It was like a playground where there were just like leaves you could slide down, and that's all I wanted. All I wanted was to go to there.
One day you will shrink to an inch high.
That would be amazing! Could sleep in a matchbox? I could ride around in a Hot Wheels car?
I wonder if Ant-Man, like in the new Ant-Man movie, like if he can talk to people that are big.
Oh, I don't know.
All
I know is that train scene is what I live for. It's the best. It's the best end to any trailer ever.
We've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on Hulu. They've been playing that same Ant-Man trailer, like, for the ad every single time. And every single time, Tony just, like, tenses up in excitement for the scene where the bad guy gets hit with the train. The Thomas.
It's all intense because it's a train and it's going to run into things and then they cut it. And it's small and all the blocks just fall over.
You know what I just kind of realized? That's a Thomas Thomas the Tank Engine, right?
Yeah.
And in that show, there was like an inch high guy in it. It was like in the, I don't know if it was just the American version or for whatever it was, but it was like George Carlin, like who was like an inch high like conductor. So I wonder if that's like a specific reference to that because they're tiny and there's a tiny guy.
What? No, that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, because Ant-Man, they shrink to small size.
No, I mean, he's just tiny because everything else is tiny. What are you talking about?
What do you mean? Well, because like, there was like real sized adults and then the tiny conductor guy.
No, he just was in scale to that world. He's not like particularly tiny.
Well, he is when he's amongst all the other people.
That doesn't happen.
Yes, it does. I watched that show when I was a kid. Like, George Carlin was, like, this big, and everybody else is normal size. I'm not making this up.
I never really watched Thomas the Tank Engine. I'm gonna be honest.
I think it was called Small Time Station or something like that.
But I just thought, like, there's that world, and he's just in scale with the rest of the world.
He might be in scale with that world, but he goes to, like, regular size people.
He goes to the...
I don't know how it works. I don't remember. But, like, he was tiny, and everything else was big.
No, everything else was the same size.
Not when you saw George Carlin. Like, generally when it showed the trains, it was just the trains, I think. But then there was, like, also real people. But then the real people were normal size, and George Carlin was, like, tiny.
All right. I don't remember.
We'll look this up later, once this podcast is done. Where were we?
I have no idea.
We went on, like, a sidetrack about trains and Ant-Man.
Sidetrack. Trains. That's great.
Oh, God. We got derailed.
What was that? That's Ian.
So, meanwhile, back in Big Boy Land.
Give me those.
No.
You're too terrible at this. Let me see.
In Big Boy Land.
In Big Boy Land.
The guy who murdered the scientist, another scientist shows up who developed the insecticide, and the dude who wants to sell the insecticide's lying.
Yeah, he's like, he basically was going to steal it for himself, so I shot him. And the other scientist is like, well, okay, that's not even a really good lie.
Because I can look at this and I can see that it was...
But he said he shot himself on accident.
Yeah, he said, like, he pulled a gun on me and he was going to steal the insecticide, and then we struggled and the gun went off. And he's like, no, it didn't. He was shot from a distance. I can tell that. And I'm not even, like, a ballistics expert. I'm just a scientist who made an incredible insecticide. That's my exposition. But still, he's going to, like...
He's going to help cover it up, basically, because...
They're
going to
get rid of the body.
This is a murder B-plot. Like, it's not important.
This,
really?
Like, goofy, oh, we've shrunk ourselves, and there's a dead body. There's, like, a murder crime thing happening. It's not even, like, a murder mystery. It's, like, we gotta get rid of the body thing. It's,
yeah.
Like, honey...
It's great. It's
honey,
fantastic.
I Shrunk the Kids meets Breaking Bad or something. It works somehow, but it's still, it's a little odd, like, these two conflicting sort of genres.
Because you kind of go back and forth between, like, look at us walking around these things that are so big!
Oh my god, it's a giant penny! Yeah. And then, gotta wash this blood off my hands.
And then, you know, like, that's happening, and you're like, there is, I'm gonna jump ahead just because you brought it up. There is a point where he is literally washing the blood off his hands, and you're freaking out because they're in the sink. You know, and you're like, oh no, don't wash your hands.
It's like slightly traumatic for the scientist because he, you know, he's helping get rid of a dead body and he doesn't really want to.
But that's not where the drama is at all.
The drama is in, oh no, the sink's filling up with water.
It's excellent and I love it.
But before we get to that, let's go back. They come out and they're going to discard the body, so all of them hide. Ian's like, let's get in this briefcase. Barbara.
Which, obviously, what happens when you hide in the briefcase is the briefcase gets picked up and moved inside, and now Ian and Barbara are inside, and the doctor and Susan are outside. And I love it when they get put back down, and they get out of the briefcase, and Ian's like, we had to pick the one that moved.
And they're both like, oh, that was nuts. We were flying all around. Like, they had to describe how crazy it was, because they didn't show it at all.
I loved it, though, because Barbara... hurts, I think it's her ankle or something. She's like, I hit my leg on some piece of metal. And then she's like, you know what's ridiculous is that I think it was a paperclip. Which is a joke that I love.
We never actually get to see the paperclips. The paperclips are mentioned many times because they were going to make a ladder out of paperclips at one point, but then it just doesn't.
Yeah, I guess I think they're set up on a table or something, and they're trying to figure out how to get back down and get back outside. And they're like, we should go back into the briefcase and get the paperclips out and create a ladder.
Open the briefcase.
Which also looked amazing, by the way. It's, you know, it's like a big button, and Ian's trying to figure out which way it needs to be slid. Like, he climbs up onto the briefcase, and Barbara's standing back on the desk where on the floor, and she's like, try left and right! And he's like, I'm working on it. And, like, there's just a scene of him trying to push the button different ways to get it open, and he eventually does, but it looks like he's standing on top of a briefcase.
And it's a cool scene and stuff, but it doesn't ultimately lead anywhere.
No, they don't.
I wonder if maybe there was something and it got cut.
Or like a prop got damaged or something like that.
Well, I mean, there was stuff that got cut because it was two episodes smushed down to one, so maybe there was a paperclip chain at some point.
That's worth watching the reconstruction for. I was a little disappointed to not see them climb down a paperclip ladder, because that would have been awesome. I would have loved to have seen that.
Apparently, all that's in the novelization as well. All the stuff that got cut, so.
So small. They're so small. So, and everything around them so big.
We're jumping ahead a lot, but let's go back. So they get rid of the body. And I was actually surprised. You actually see, like, blood and, like,
there's a wound. Bullet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, man, this is dark. They take the body and then Doc and Susan are like, where Barbara and Ian? And like, I don't know. I think they got taken inside with the briefcase. And they're like, well, we need to get inside. So they decide to climb up a drain pipe because it's corroded and has handholds.
As far as I understand it, the drain pipe is kind of what's been used to, like, get the insecticide. That's what that...
Oh, yeah.
Or the insecticide has been washed down that pipe before. I don't think they are aware of the insecticide at this point. But
they do, like, see, like, after they start climbing up the pipe, Barbara and Ian are getting out and they see test tubes. That's when they did another one of those filmed inserts.
There's a really great scene where Ian sits down on, like, a thing of litmus paper. And he's like, remember when I used to, like, be able to hold those in my hand? I guess this is, like, a good bench now. But it's really nice because Ian's like, I remember all these things from being a teacher and using them. It's like, now they're all giant and I'm super small. Life is weird.
Yeah, and behind the litmus paper is like a giant stack of wheat seeds or something.
And everything, by the way, that's dead, they kind of mention it. That they're like, it smells weird. And that's what they're smelling, that insecticide.
But Barbara picks up one of the little wheat seeds. She's like, oh, it's sticky. Can I clean my hands on your handkerchief, Ian? And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. But that's actually an important plot point because Barbara gets the insecticide on her hands and then doesn't tell anyone.
I was so mad at Barbara. Because I'm like, Barbara, you're supposed to be the one who knows what you're doing. Why aren't you telling anyone? Like, she starts getting sick. And she starts getting sicker and sicker. And, like, she's like, oh, I'm fine. It's nothing. And it's like, you have to tell them! What are you doing?
After they talk a bit, they decide to do the paperclip ladder. They do the unlatching. But while Ian is doing that, unlatching the thing, a fly lands next to Barbara. And she faints. Which, I'm not entirely into. But maybe it's because she's starting to get sick. I'll buy that. I don't want to buy it.
That, by the way, is what I was talking about. The fly that we see is alive and moving, and it looks pretty decent. I was fairly impressed with it. Then, of course, it touches the insecticide and dies instantly. And that's when we start to worry.
Yeah, and Barbara's like,
she's like, it didn't eat it. It didn't, you know, because that's what they...
It just touched it, yeah.
By the time they figure out about the insecticide, they're like, I guess we can't eat or drink anything until we figure out how to get back into the TARDIS and figure out how to get back to normal size. And this is the first time that you're kind of like, she could be in trouble just by touching it.
Susan and the doctor get up the drain pipe and start yelling.
Which, it takes the doctor... It's great. I love the doctor being old. Can I say that?
Yeah.
Susan's like climbing up there and she's like turning around and they're like, are you all right? Are you on your way? And he's like, I'm fine. I'm good. Keep going. And it's just taking him just a little bit longer. And he's like exhausted by the time he gets up to the top. He like collapses at the top of the drain. And it's just like, I'm just going to lay here for a while. we'll find him in a second.
And they start yelling, and because the shape of the sink acts as a... It's like amplifier.
Yeah, it's a bowl. That's sound science.
And luckily, it's right next to where Ian and Barbara are, and then they all join back up, and they all go down into the sink. They're like, we'll just climb back down this drain pipe to get out. But I don't remember.
That's when he goes to wash his hands, is it not?
Yeah, but like, how do like Ian and Barbara get out of the sink?
They're not. They never get all the way down. They see the doctor and Susan in the sink, and they're going to climb down. What it is there's like a drain stopper, and it's like hooked onto the top of the sink, and there's a chain between the top of the sink and the drain. So they start to climb down to get to Susan and the doctor, and that's when
the scientist who's been cleaning up the body, which I don't think clean up the blood on like the. Where the body was. I don't think the other guy helped at all. The greedy jackass.
Oh, no. He didn't. That's so rude. So, at least clean up after your own murder.
Yeah, he's pretty much like, you do that. I'm going to go amend this report so it says that the insecticide is awesome.
Which the scientist doesn't realize right away, but we'll get to that. So, yeah, he goes to the sink, and Ian and Barbara immediately are climbing back out. Susan and the doctor climb back down the drain.
They're climbing down, and, like, he's filled the sink up with water, but, I mean, the stopper's
he's
in
stopped it,
it
he's and filled it up.
And he's washing his hands. And it's so dramatic. And he's sad because he's cleaning up after a dead body. Like you said, you don't care. You're just worried for the doctor.
Yeah, you're just like, oh my god, don't pull the plug, don't pull the drain.
And he pulls the drain stopper and the water goes down and that's the cliffhanger. And you're like, whoa!
Which was excellent.
That's the end of Dangerous Journey. It ends with the doctor and Susan dying.
It's really weird.
Yeah, it's a really weird serial. So next week, no, the next episode is Crisis. There's an overflow pipe. That
they climbed into the overflow pipe and watched the water pour out and just got a little bit wet. They're fine. It's all good.
It's a little weird little side hole. They've escaped death and the bad guy, the greedy jackass, as I'm calling him.
All right. That's fair.
Is calling in the report because he figures this guy would call in the report. It wouldn't just send it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's like putting like...
He puts a handkerchief over the receiver and is like, our sound
connection.
Totally different now.
Yeah, it's bad connection. Sorry. This text sounds awesome. But like the switchboard person who switches him over is like, that doesn't sound like him. That doesn't sound like him at all. This plot is being basically resolved with little to no influence from Team TARDIS at this point.
Because they're too little.
I think they do something at some point.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
But
it's very heroic when it happens.
They find a notepad, Team TARDIS.
Because mm-hmm.
they've decided, like, we need to do something about this insecticide. We can't just bolt.
Which right? they don't figure it out through... I mean, like, it's not like they overhear it because they can't hear any words. They just kind of start putting it together. But yeah, they see this notepad.
Well, they also, like, saw a dead guy.
Well, yes. But they have this notepad and it has the formula on it, but the notepad's so big that they have to like spread up and it's like, all right, Susan, you take this half of the paper. Barbara, you take that half of the paper. Tell me what you see and I'll like transcribe it onto this tiny notepad that I had in my pocket.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. And there's once they get it all copied down,
they figure out how it's awful.
Yeah, and Ian kind of has a nice scene where he's reading it, and he's like, okay, I recognize these compounds and, you know, these different things. He's like, this one's a little bit out of my range, and him and the doctor kind of work on it together, and I like seeing Ian do science.
It was cute. But meanwhile, Barbara's just like, is there a cure? Is there a cure?
Yeah, and everyone's like, why would we need to cure it? We just
like,
need to stop.
Oh, they're already dead. What are you worried
yeah,
about?
All the bugs are dead. We don't need to look for a cure. And Barbara's like, no reason. Just ask him for a friend.
So they decide we'll try to call someone. The police or whatever, get them over. Maybe if we all yell loud enough into a telephone, if we can prop the receiver up, we can
understand us.
Yeah, we'll get somebody over here.
Which, the scene for it is fantastic, first of all, because giant telephone. It's great. But they're going to put these corks. They grab giant corks. I really like this scene.
Yeah.
They grab the corks and they have to, like, I think it takes, like, two of them to lift up the receiver. And then Susan
shove.
shoves a cork underneath, and that's how they kind of get the telephone lifted up enough.
The switchboard thing, and they all start yelling into it, but it doesn't...
They can't hear.
They can't hear, so... But, I mean, it does lead to something, so... Yeah, their initial plan technically doesn't work.
At this point, has Barbara finally come clean?
No, she's about to, but, like, she's really sick, and, like, she passes out.
Yeah, and, like, they're all working together to move this telephone and these corks. Like, they have to, like, climb up and pass them up to each other. And Barbara has to, like, sit out of it because she's just sick.
And I think at this point they're like, yeah, they figure it out.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, we'll have to get back to the TARDIS and fix you up.
And this is when Barbara's kind of like, no, we're not going back to the TARDIS. We have to stay and make sure that this insecticide thing gets solved before we go back. Ian's like, no, we're going back to the TARDIS. You're sick. Barbara and the doctor are kind of like, look, you can't stop her. Barbara's going to do what Barbara's going to do. We just have to help.
So they decide, let's start a fire. Burning down the house. I did that joke last episode.
It was just as funny.
By that, you mean not at all?
I mean, I love you.
So yeah,
they're going to start a fire.
There's like a gas spigot thing, and they have the matches.
They have a match, and Ian and Susan basically take the match and have to run as fast as they can along the box.
Like a battering ram.
And they do it the first time, and it doesn't work, and the doctor's like... Well, that's all wrong. You gotta do it this way. And Ian, who has just, like, ran the width of a matchbox holding a match in his hand, which all of these things are much larger and much heavier, is like, okay, well, have you ever tried to do this? No, so shut up. Like, that's basically the scene.
Right, and what they're gonna do is, like, it'll just, like, start a little flame thing going, and they're going to explode this can.
There's a can of the insecticide not far from the gas spigot. Like, they don't have to move it, so that was terrible. That's some terrible safety precautions on their part.
Yeah, but, you know, convenient. Meanwhile, the bad guy's like, something's wrong with the phone.
It's been off the hook. The switchboard person has, like, called the police and been like, something isn't right here. Someone's pretending to be this guy. I know it. And so she calls back with the police officer listening in and basically convinces the police officer that
this is not the guy that it's supposed to be.
Because he answers the phone like just as himself. And they're like, oh, where's the scientist guy who you killed? I don't remember his name. And he's like, oh, hang on a second. I'll go get him. And then puts a handkerchief over the phone and is like, hi, it's me, the other guy. Like, he doesn't even make that much effort that I just did.
Yeah.
He sounds exactly the same. And she's like, see, it's the same guy. And the police officer's like, I'll go check it out. So he does. In the meantime, they've got the thing lit. They have exploded the can.
No, they have not exploded the can yet.
They've got it lit.
It's lit and they're getting away because it's going to be like a huge explosion for them.
Yes.
But
there's going to be like shrapnel, like giant chunks of metal.
The scientist finds out the insecticide's bad.
Because the scientist, up until this point, the second scientist who's covering... He's worked to develop it. It's his life work. His life's work. And what he basically wanted was basically just to be able to feed people. He's like, it'll protect food, we'll be able to make more, and less people will go hungry. And it's not until the very end where he eventually sees the original reports that says how much, like, how harmful it is, that he really gets clued into what's been going on.
Right. But then he's like, confronts the guy, and they get into, like, a bit of an argument, and then the jackass pulls a gun on him, and they're going to go back to the lab. I don't remember entirely that, but like he's taking him there. Like maybe he's going to take him out too, or something. It's unsure of what's going on. But they get in there, and as soon as they get in there, the can explodes, hitting jackass in the face.
Right in the eyes. Ugh.
Potentially blinded, who knows? But then the cop shows up at the same time and like arrests them, and like the doctor sees this as he's climbing back down the drain pipe. So that quickly gets resolved. Everything sort of climaxes at the same time. The can explodes in the guy's face. The cop arrives, arrests him, and the scientist says I think the scientist tells the cop, this is what happened, because I don't want to be a part of this. I mean, I did sort of attempt to hide a body, But that's not it.
Let's not talk about there. That.
So they all, Team TARDIS gets back in the TARDIS, though we don't really see the trip back to the TARDIS. I bet that's something that got cut.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, A, don't need it, but B, I bet it was there.
I'm certain that it was filmed, yes.
They get back in the TARDIS, and they're the Doctor's trying to recreate the situation that caused the shrinkage to begin with.
He grabs, by the way, he grabs one of the wheat seeds. He grabs it, and Ian's like, that's covered in poison, what are you doing? And he's like...
Well, he covers it with his cape.
He's not touching it. But he's like, don't worry about it, trust me. Oh, and I don't think we even said, Barbara has been poisoned by the insecticide, which is really only a problem if she's small. Basically, what's explained is that once she's returned to regular size, it won't be enough to kind of, like, interfere with her immune system. So, returning to regular size, she'll be fine.
Mm.
They don't need to, like, have the cure. There doesn't need to be, like, an antidote. She'll just, being big again, will fix her.
Right.
So, he grabs one of the seeds, wraps it up in his cape, and they get back to the TARDIS, and they're trying to recreate what happened. And there's this awesome shot of the seed slowly getting smaller and smaller.
And then Ian's like, it completely disappeared. And like,
the doctor's like,
no, come on, Ian, think. It's just tiny.
It's just small again. It's just the size it's supposed to be. Come on.
And then
keep up.
He shows him, and then Ian's like, oh, it's alive! No. But Barbara's fine.
So they completely foiled the plot of the murder.
By making a failed phone call. That's pretty much it.
Well, and the fire helped.
The fire helped, but the police officer would have been there anyway.
That's true. It would have.
Helped a little. Then they're like, they land somewhere, I think, and they're like, where are we? But they can't see because the TV's been destroyed. The TV exploded. That's the cliffhanger for Planet of Giants.
Oh, so good.
Good episode.
I mean, I am aware that a big part of my enjoyment of this episode is just the set pieces and it being an idea that I really like. It's not like this is like the best written or the most interesting episode of Doctor Who. It was just bound to be my favorite.
The set design was amazing. Without a doubt, that was something that was really, really good. Like, there was no moments where I felt like disconnect between like the actual size scenes with the scientist and Jackass and the tiny scenes. Like, it felt seamless.
Everything worked. There wasn't ever a moment either, like you said, where it's like, that's out of scale. Like, yeah, it's a smaller version of it, but it's not, it's off. Everything was, and even the scenes where, like, you've got Ian standing in front of the dead body and us watching it, we're like, yeah, that isn't the most effective thing ever. It's still really impressive.
Yeah.
Like, to me, with the resources that were available, that looks great.
And, like, the designs of, like, the oversized props are all great. And they match the normal size props, too. Like,
yeah,
when you
really
see,
well.
You know, because, like, the dude's smoking a cigarette and he's about to pick up the matchbox and you're like, oh no, Ian's in there. But, like, the matchbox looks the same as the giant matchbox and everything looked really seamless.
There's never really a kind of jarring moment, I feel like, where you're like, that's not really where they are, or there's nothing that kind of takes you out of that. They're all in install the entire way through, you know? And it's great. You're so small. I could have picked up Ian and put him in my pocket.
Like, if there was any complaint I'd have is, like, maybe they could have tied the two plots together a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like, had more of an influence. I'm not entirely sure how, but like, maybe be a little more involved in defeating the bad guy rather than their failed plan just happen
to have
a weird side effect. I mean, I thought it was great. Like, it was weird having a murder plot, but
I loved it. Like I said, yeah. I absolutely love cutting back and forth between this kind of, and it's the A plot, this kind of goofy, silly, exploring the world while being tiny. And look at all these silly props and stuff, and cutting back to, like, this murder and this very serious thing. And it's not the serious plot. It's kind of the B plot. It's kind of the background. And
yeah, and it's not just like, oh, we killed a body, we gotta get rid of it. Like, there's, like, detailed plans. Like, well, he said he was going on this boat cruise after he did this. We'll just take him on the boat.
We'll have that time.
We'll turn over the boat. And, like, it's, like, this whole, they come up with this whole plan, and it's, like, pretty detailed and, like, figured out. And it's just, like, this is weird. Like, to be up against this, you know, Honey, We Shrunk the TARDIS.
I think it's great. I think, I like that kind of balance. Like I said, I was telling somebody about it, that I was like, I love that someone has killed someone, and they're, like, going to wash the blood off of their hands, and you don't care! Because you're really just worried about the people in the drain and the sink.
But, I still sort of care. So,
no, it's not, like, not that you don't care about that plot.
Yeah.
It's just, like, when that's not the biggest thing happening in the story.
Yeah. Like, it works on one level, and on a completely different level, you're like, oh, no!
Yeah.
It's great. It's like a mundane... In a normal story, it could have just been a mundane, oh, I'm going to go wash my hands. But it also has this added layer of, I'm washing blood off my hands. So, like, there's more there than there could have been. I mean, it could have just been a typical we're in a house situation. But, like, you have this added layer of, like, a murder story. So, like, a crime story. Which is kind of cool.
If that B-plot wasn't there, it could have been just kind of a silly, goofy episode, which I would have still loved. But it's nice. It's nice that there was
some extra thought into what else could be happening that would be interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if necessarily it's a great season opener, necessarily.
Disagree.
Well, you like it.
I think we should do that with every Team TARDIS. I want to see how they deal with being 1 inch tall, every single one of them. Oh, no. Oh, that'd be so great.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. So they don't know where they landed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I know where they landed.
Where?
Well, it's in the title of the next serial, because the next serial is the Dalek Invasion of Earth.
What?
Bum, bum, bum. Tune in next time. I keep wanting to say week.
It's not. It's every other week.
Yeah. Tune in next every other week.
Wait. That is a thing that I remember really liking.
What's that?
They do have, like, a tune in next time. And they show, like, the next title in the broken TV.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, we don't know where we're going because we can't see the screen. And then, like, in the screen, it's like,
World's End.
Which I thought was great. Like, we don't know where we're going. And it's like, but you do. Don't you want to stay tuned and see what happens next time? Don't you?
Don't you wish your girlfriend was... No, wait, what are we doing?
We're signing off.
Oh, we're signing off. Tune back in and we'll be talking about
the Dalek Invasion of Earth
with special guest Jez. This episode's kind of short. It's like a regular podcast shrunk down.
Oh no, imagine if we were only an inch tall or a cat would eat us.
I think we did get shrunk. That's what this episode, that's what happened. We're shrunk and now we're short.
And Jez is going to have to come and rescue us.
Jez, save us!
Jez, we're so small!
Bye.
That was dumb.